TagCastPodcast.com.
Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you as always by our gracious sponsors at Pizza Now and Complete Ag Resolutions. Complete Ag Resolutions offer you the best solutions in all your agricultural needs. They're a family-based business where the customer always comes first. Check them out at facebook.com/completeagresolutions. And Pizza Now, they're ready when you are. They're at 1705 Southeast Hill Street. And I personally would suggest that you get the porcupine pizza. It's a barbecue base with a pulled pork and pineapple and red onions if you like that stuff. Check them out. They have a Facebook at Pizza Now Albany. You can call them up at 928-0900. You can check out their Twitter at Pizza Now One. So check out Pizza Now and Complete Ag Resolutions. And now listen to your episode. Hey, Gatch.
Yeah.
We're on iTunes. We're on TuneIn. We're on Stitcher. We're on the internet. We're on Facebook. We're on TagCastPodcast.com.
You just blew my mind.
Did you say blow?
Mind. I'm losing my mind.
And now, once again, it's time for the TagCast Podcast with Terry and Gatch.
Is it blow?
Yeah.
My name's Terry Gatch.
You know what you are? You give me leg monster!
You're a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot.
Hello, everybody. I can't speak.
My leg was right out in the middle of the street.
Did you know that I've seen your penis 6 times today? And his name is Dustin Gatchel.
Would you go to the president's office? Shit on his desk while he's watching right there on his desk.
We don't need idiots.
Ernest?
Good for nothings. Meth heads. Or
Bob.
I'm getting made for this, boys.
The TagCast Podcast starts right now. I wonder if you could get pizza now in 1967.
Shakey's.
Remember Shakey's?
Look it up. I'm going to look up.
You remember Shakey's Pizza? That was around here, around Chion, wasn't it?
I hear stories, but I don't know if I remember it.
It was pretty shaky. Story of my life. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a hump day episode of the TagCast Podcast. And today we're going to do a special episode about albums of 1967. And that's what we're hearing in the background, Jimi Hendrix. Across the table is my cohort.
Hey, yeah, it's Gatchelapagalacogol guy.
I knew you were going to fuck that up. And we got a special guest in the studio today in the form of Jim Louder.
Hello.
Jim. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, anytime.
And how did we get on this? You guys had a conversation one day 20 years ago.
No, no, this is what it was. I put up a poll of...
A stripper poll?
Of...
A fireman poll.
Best album.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Of 1967, I do believe it was. And it was Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Or...
The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's,
right?
Drawing a blank on the third one.
Are you experienced?
No.
Oh, darn it.
No.
Was it the Monkees?
Hey, hey, with the Monkees.
No.
People say the Monkees around.
No, there was a third one, but it was kind of a little bit.
The Rolling Stones.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
The
it
Satanic
was,
Rites of Majesty's
Request.
Their Majesty's Satanic Request.
Yeah.
Satanic.
So, yeah, and then... I think you piped in, Jim, and you said, man, you know, you said you listed your top three and said, but man, there was a lot of great albums that year, man.
There sure was.
Yeah, and we got talking about it, and I said that would be a great subject to bring on the podcast, because it was, man. There was.
And even though none of us were born yet.
Yeah.
It's true.
But, you know, I do have some news about 1967.
I was in the womb for a tiny bit towards the end of 1967.
Oh, yeah?
Just like, I think it was probably around Christmas time when my dad nailed my old lady. You remember back in the day when you used to call your mom, at least I do, yeah. We used to call her the old lady, but now that's your girlfriend if you're a biker or a dick. I think the guys that call their girlfriends old ladies, I don't know. That's not very nice. Unless they're old, I guess. If you're like 80, you could say, eh, my old lady did this or did that. Anyway, what do you got for us, 67?
Well, I guess we were talking about this off the air, whether pizza. There's chains of pizza and pizza now.
Yeah, we might have
available.
We might have stuck in an early soundbite.
Yeah.
You do that sometimes.
And there was. The first Pizza Hut appeared in the 30s, and in like 1959, it was incorporated.
Wow. I said Shakey's.
And frozen pizza was invented by Rose Totino.
You know that he's the one that invented it.
Yeah.
Tony stole his idea.
He was always having parties.
Who's Tony? Is that Tony Totino? And he just like stole his brother's idea.
He's the guy on the cover of the pizza, right?
There's no guy, is there? Was there a guy on the Totinos?
On Tony's? Yeah, on Tony's like there was.
Yeah, on Tony's there is.
Yeah.
Totino's, I think they just show their shitty pizza on the cover.
Enlarged to show texture.
Right.
Enlarged
and then
to show.
It shows somebody getting a 1/6 of this tiny pizza. And underneath it in the fine print, it says serving suggestion. You shouldn't eat more. In this tiny little
sliver
of this horrible pizza.
Yeah. Always 12 slices, no matter what.
Right? Totino's that are those regular size ones, that's just like, I eat that by myself. And you probably eat like 2 or 3 of them. But I don't because that wouldn't be good for me.
Yeah.
I'm so health conscious when I eat. Anyway, so.
Yeah, and in the late 60s, that's when delivery was really starting to get going.
Wow.
Of pizza.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, they used that a lot in the 70s porn.
Yeah.
Hey, lady, did you order a pizza? Pepperoni pizza? Here's the pizza, and here's the pepperoni.
Yeah.
By the way,
pepperoni.
Forgot to mention on Monday's episode, I didn't know you were giving away free porn at the benefit the other night.
Yeah, I just had it laying around the house, and I was like, well, I don't really need to go to a website.
It was hotmovies.com.
Hotmovies.com, yeah. It was a free 30-minute card.
And it said you could download the movies and watch them as many times as you want. For 2 days. 2 days.
Well, remember Al, when he was on, he had that thing where he had on his phone to where it was like 99 cents to download a movie and you could watch it as many times as you want. But the download was 99 cents, but every time you watched it billed
$3.99.
Yeah, $3.99.
Oh, wow.
And him and his daughter, like, watched this one movie, like, because they thought 99 cents, you can watch it as many times as you want.
His phone bill was like $120 over.
Oh, that's madness.
And yeah.
He couldn't do nothing about it because he didn't read the fine print. They're like, hey, you watch the movies, that's what the charge is.
Yeah, and how many times they probably restarted it.
They didn't have cell phones and movies on your phone in 1967, though, so...
They didn't.
So one of my favorites of that year, I did a song coming into the episode from Are You Experienced, was a great album. My parents had that laying around. Actually had two different copies, and I never knew why. But now as I'm older, I notice they're on different labels. I don't know why they would buy it twice or if a friend left their copy. But there was always a couple of copies of that laying around the house. Red House, Manic Depressant. I can't speak.
Are You Experienced? He was doing some sort of reverse shit.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't he?
Backwards recording. Why, I guess they would have to actually take the tape and cut it and flip it upside down and then record the guitar solo on it and then flip it back over. These days, they probably have a program on Pro Tools that says play backwards, click.
Yeah. Oh, I got it on mine. I've used it on some of our promos and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Where we go.
That was a good backwards talk. So that's where I started with Hendrix, and I didn't realize this till I did some searching online that he actually released two albums in the year of 1967. Also released Axis Bold as Love.
Which that was just in the UK, though, right? That particular release?
Yeah, I think it came out in US in 68, right? Yeah. And so at least it was out somewhere, so I counted that one, and it had a lot of great tunes on it, too. Two songs about castles.
Oh, really?
That would have been a much better title.
Spanish Castle Magic and Castles Made of Sand. And Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
This might be off topic. Well, was Little Wing on either of those albums?
Yeah.
Okay, then this is on topic.
Okay.
What's your favorite version as far as like who plays the best Little Wing?
Well.
All right. Top two. I'm going to give you... top two.
It's weird.
So you might be able to throw Hendrix up there as number one if you wish.
Yeah. The Hendrix version is really short.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 2.5 minutes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know. I love the way he plays that intro. Mm-hmm. But I would have to. I love Stevie Ray Vaughan's version because it's instrumental.
He goes balls out.
He does.
He does. Like he really. Andy, I mean, he probably played it longer than Hendrix did. You know, realistically, right? As far as like
over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean,
and I believe he won a Grammy for that performance.
Yeah.
For best instrumental rock performance.
I love. Yeah. It's amazing Grammys. To watch that guy play guitar.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen that live at El Mocambo? It's a place up in Canada, and they have a video out on it. Dude, he plays that guitar every which way but loose.
Oh, really?
He plays it loose, too, but behind his head, with his teeth. He plays the whole song behind his back.
Really?
Yeah, solo and all.
And he doesn't brush his teeth ever.
No.
It's amazing.
Well, with Coke. With whiskey and Coke. It's like in a, you know, you got the, it's like a baking soda and vinegar thing.
Yeah, this was, and this was in 83, so he was still all wasted. Yeah.
But he, like, when around probably 67 or something, when he was young, he was like, wasn't he sitting on stage with Hendrix or something? Or am I just making that up as a story I might have heard?
I think you're making that up, but it sounds like a story that I heard about another performer named Kenny Wayne Shepherd, who sat on the stage watching Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
But I don't believe... How
yeah,
old was
okay. That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds more feasible.
All right. And his dad was friends with Stevie Ray Vaughan, I guess.
Okay.
And he was a prodigy, though, I think, for a 16-year-old coming out with an album that was screaming blues, but...
All right. Yeah. Was that... Yeah. All right.
Okay. Back to 67. You're the king of the segues out of where we are supposed to be.
What do you got for 67 over there, Jim?
Do you have favorites or just a full...
I have some favorites.
Yeah.
I thought The Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Oh, man. Really?
Absolutely. Incredible record.
Some Pink Floyd going on. You got Matilda Mother, right? Or Power Talk.
Power Talk. That one. The
Chapter 24.
Yeah, Chapter 24 is a good one. The Gnome.
Yeah. Bike.
The Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
That was so looped out.
Yeah. He was...
Sid Did you hear our story about what he used to do with his hair gel and the Mandy's?
Oh, I've heard it all. Seen all these documentaries
he'd
and
crush up pills and put in his hair gel and just let it soak into his brain
and melt on the stage lights.
Yeah. Scare the audience thinking that his flesh was just falling.
Well, they probably are all on acid.
Of course they were.
His Sid's solo stuff is incredible, of course. And then
a few years ago, they
released a big set with all these outtakes from the studio, and you can hear him talking to himself and to the engineer.
Oh, wow.
And it's wild.
He was known for, like, locking people in rooms and stuff, and, like, chicks in rooms for days.
Is that what he was known for?
Well, he was known
for like, he'd drug them up and, like, tie them to the bed or something, or what?
I think they'd just lock them in a room is what I read in the biography. He was just, like, they'd come over to his apartment because they were so drawn to him, and they're, you know... probably all drugged up, and he would get probably all paranoid. And
you stay in here, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Bro. 17 hours later, he comes back. Are you all right?
With all his white hair flowing down.
Like, I'm going out for chips.
Like, Sid, you've got white stuff in your hair.
Oh,
what is
man.
That?
Imagine if he just like sat in the room with you and just like sang Bike to you over and over. With no instrumentation.
That'd be scary. That sounds like the premise for a nice series.
Mm, wow.
Sid Barrett.
And that was recorded in the same studio at the same time as Sgt. Pepper's.
Yeah, that's right.
And some say Paul McCartney might have even got a little inspiration.
I believe it.
So that wasn't recorded at Abbey Road? That was before they started recording at Abbey Road Studios, the Beatles?
No, that was at Abbey Road.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. There right was on. Another act, too, that was recording there early on in the days.
Well, a lot of bands did, didn't they?
All right, then.
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, see, there was another band.
A whole bunch of other bands. I think they had a whole list of clientele that recorded there.
Yeah, and so Sgt. Pepper's, I'll throw that one out there. You know?
Yeah.
That was great. Probably not my favorite Beatles album.
but for the time, pretty groundbreaking, I think.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, just the trippiness of it and just the whole ride that it takes you on.
Now, have you heard the term for genre of music of Baroque pop?
No.
You've heard
Baroque? I haven't I've heard Baroque is like an old classical term, right?
Right. But I guess they considered this album and like some of David Bowie's stuff at that time Baroque pop, which incorporates instrumentation, orchestration, kind of like, you know, like just the weird stuff, kind of like the, what's that sound on The Benefit of Mr. Kite? It sounds like a calliope. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
What's a calliope? Yeah.
Isn't the calliope one of them
horses that goes around?
It's like an air-driven.
Yeah. But they had access to all that weird instruments, too. And I think part of it, you know, they had a kick-ass producer who they could go, you know, this is the kind of sound we want in this song.
And he'd write
probably
all
go, okay, well, let's bring this in. And, you know, this is how we'll obtain that sound.
I think a lot of people do know, but I think a lot of people don't know how much of a genius George Martin was as far as, like, writing parts to implement and make their sound so full, and especially on this album. And also Magical Mystery Tour came out in 67.
Yeah, which was really heavily...
psychedelic.
Yeah, and was that the one that had half the album was... George Martin stuff, or was that Yellow Submarine?
That was Yellow Submarine.
Wow.
Yeah, this one had like, I won't be able to remember now.
Fool on the Hills on that record.
Yeah.
It's an awesome song.
It is. Yeah. And of course, Magical Mystery Tour. And did you ever watch that
old
movie?
Old Brown Shoe or something? Is it Universal, Across the Universe?
I don't think so. I think those were later. I think those were Let It Be.
Oh, man.
Those were Let It Be, 69-70 era. But yeah, Beatles.
67 points.
You are. 67 points down. Yeah. So didn't find any on your list that were like favorites?
I did. Oh, I just threw, I'm picking and choosing. I
did
I
like
threw
a top,
Sergeant Pepper out
top
there.
Top 10, but I didn't put him in order.
Oh, no. I'm, you know, I got some I'll throw out there.
A big influence on me, because it was also lying around the house, was Absolutely Free by Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, which had Brown Shoes Don't Make It and Plastic People, America Drinks. Just a ton of the Vegetable song, Call Any Vegetable. It was a great album. I had the 8-track laying around the house as a kid, and the record, I think I still have it. It's totally mangled. The seams are all split, but I still have it.
Nice.
That was a great album.
What about Lumpy Gravy? That came out in 67.
Yeah. I didn't get into that until later, and I still have a hard time getting into it because it's so weird. Do you know what about it?
Nothing about it whatsoever.
It's a weird...
Except the title.
It's about these three people that live in a piano.
Really?
And they talk about all these weird subjects, and some of the voices that you can't really hear, but they're in there, are people like Eric Clapton and different few other people. I think we talked about it on... We have a side project, the Zappa Tag Cast. One of the episodes, we talked about it, and we go into detail about all the pseudo... Well, they weren't pseudo. They were definitely celebrities at the time. But, yeah, it's a strange brainchild of Frank, and it's just like orchestral music. Orchestral, I guess you'd say, however you want to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. It's a tough listen. It's not something you can just like really sit down and get into.
Yeah. You want it in your headphones when you're mowing the lawn?
Maybe.
What about... Was that... No, he didn't work with Beefheart on that, right?
No.
But Beefheart had his Safe as Milk album.
Yeah, that did come out, and I saw that, and I don't know anything about that. It was before...
Oh, it's pretty safe.
Milk's pretty safe. The one I remember mostly from him, I think, was 71, the Trout Mask replica, which he got help from Frank Zappa on that. But, yeah, I was wondering, you don't know anything about the Safe as Milk album?
No, I just saw on here it's got that song Abba Zabba.
That was good candy.
Yeah.
Do you remember those?
Abba Zabba Zabba Dib Ding Dong, yeah.
That like, white shit that's filled with fake
not
peanut
big
butter?
On that, or what was that other one? Zero?
Zero.
Is that even a candy bar? It tasted like weirdness.
They just give you like what it ranks on a scale of 1 to 10 for the name.
Yeah!
Here's a new candy bar. It's really good. It's not a 10. It's a 0.
It's a 0. Yeah.
Well, 100 grand, man. Those are pretty good.
So a lot of people, we were talking to the Dixie and... Lance and a couple other people said, oh, yeah, 67, great influential year for albums, and two of the biggest bands out of the 60s as far as sales and longevity for popularity, the Beatles and the Doors, both released two albums in that year.
Yeah.
Now, the Doors.
Their first album came out, like, I think January 4th or something, so it barely made the 67, and then the other one came out later in the year, but... What do you think about it? Do you think that's one of their best albums in either one of your opinions? The first Doors album?
First Doors album
is pretty great. Strange Days was the other album that came out that year.
Yeah.
Those are both killer albums.
Yeah, they've got tons of hits. Like, yeah. You could make a greatest hits just by putting those together on a two-disc compilation.
I'd have to look at the track.
He doesn't really like the Doors that much, I don't think.
Well, I just pick and choose what Doors I like.
Well, you know.
I like listening to them as an album.
It's got the one
when
hate.
They just play the songs on the radio are the ones that have the monotonous droney chorus.
I know
over
that it's
and
hard
over and over and over.
I know that it's hard to do, but try to take yourself back to before you ever heard the song Break On Through to the Other Side.
Mm-hmm. And envision Val Kilmer singing it.
No. Take yourself back to before you've ever even heard or seen a Val Kilmer, and you buy this new record by this band and you put it on, and the first song you hear is try to take it out of the fact.
I'm not saying that, you know, that
it would be a great rock song, don't you think? If it hadn't been ruined by the radio.
Yeah.
See, it's not that ruined for me because I don't have the torture of having to listen to the radio all day, every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, and as well, I think, you know, it's the great listens as albums.
I mean, it had The End on it.
Mm-hmm. It's a great song. I like that one.
When the Music's Over.
Mm-hmm.
20th Century Fox,
mm-hmm.
Soul Kitchen.
Yeah.
That was a great album.
Yeah.
And I can't remember all the songs.
Was that the one
Days.
Love Me Do was on?
No.
Oh, wait, it was Love Me, Lover Madly.
You know what I thought was funny one time? The song by Eric Burdon and the Animals was playing. It was House of the Rising Sun. And it got over, and someone's like, man, I love the Doors.
Wow. Well, you put it together, and
because
it's
got the tinkly organ in it, and it's, there is a house. You know?
Yeah, and you think house, doors.
All houses have doors.
Well, most.
Well, the House of the Rising Sun had a door.
Yeah.
We're sure of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's stated very clearly.
And in this day and age, if someone was to do that, it would be totally ironic, and they'd be kidding when the song got over by Stone Temple Pilots, and they're like, man, I love Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Flower Traveling Band does an excellent cover of House of the Rising Sun.
Flower Traveling Band?
Yeah, Flower Traveling Band.
Are they
from Japan?
Oh,
that right. Late 60s, early 70s.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Never heard of them. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, you got to check them out. They're
playing
pretty
in the
great.
Flower Traveling Band.
Huh.
That's where CCR got that song.
Was CCR release any albums in 67?
I didn't see any on the list.
Like, they were only a band for about 2 years, and I think it was like 68 to 70, and that was it.
Hmm. And they were probably garaging.
They recorded.
They were probably playing.
Yeah, right. I mean, weren't they only? Or they were maybe they were only touring as a band for 2 years or something before it was over with.
They released like 800 songs in that 2 years.
Yeah, isn't that kind of? Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
They're all great songwriters.
It's kind of like the Wesley Willis of 60s.
Well, I heard that they were
67. They were probably playing crowds of two people.
I heard that they were a band before, and Tom Fogerty was actually the leader and the singer and the songwriter, and they sucked.
Not John.
No, and then John goes, hey, I got a couple songs. Can I sing them? And they're like, dude, like, you're way awesomer than him. Why don't you write and sing all the songs? And then Tom got all butthurt.
Of course.
And then he died later.
And then he died.
Later on, like 20 years. And now
what a pussy.
Now you got Creedence Clearwater Revisited playing with two members and... What? Really?
I saw a feudal story the other day about two sisters, and they're famous, and I don't remember their names.
Are they connected at the head?
They must not be
Julie
that
Andrews, does that sound right?
She's famous.
All right, and they were sisters way back in the day. Like
the Andrews sisters?
No, I think that's a different act.
Oh, okay.
Cole Miners, that's
they,
not
it. She had a different last name, but
the Judds?
They were both up for an award at the same time.
Yeah.
Like an Academy Award. And one of them won, and the other one was so upset. It's been 72 years, and they still don't talk over it.
And they're still alive?
Yep. And they're both still alive and still do not talk. And it's been, they're both like 91.
Now, sure? is the not talking a symptom of being 114 years old? Or that's where I'm unclear. It's a little foggy right there.
Yeah. I also read a story of a 102-year-old lady who just quit smoking. And I think that's why.
That's pretty cool.
I read a story of
what if that's keeping her together?
That's got to be rough after all those years. I remember hearing a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but because I heard it on the radio, about an old French guy who lived to be like 108 years old or something like that. And they said, "What's your secret?" And his secret was his diet, he thought. He smoked a lot. He drank a gallon of Ripple wine every day.
Yeah.
And most his diet, I guess, mostly what he ate was bread that had been slathered with bacon grease and fried on the stove.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. People talk about like greasy diets and syrups, and I guess it just keeps you
just being held together, and your nerves and your cells have no chance of falling apart.
Or maybe the more grease you eat, like, the toxins don't get a chance to stay in you very long. It's like
they just go right through.
It's created a non-hospitable environment.
I read a story about a 104-year-old woman who's pissed because she couldn't put her correct date or her age on her Facebook because the oldest year you could choose as being born is 1928.
Oh, that's crazy.
So they're trying to remedy the problem.
That's ageist.
1928, that's not that even
that
ageist.
Old.
That is
ageist. I know, but if you're 104, that means you were born in 1909.
Yeah.
Wow. Could you imagine?
That's crazy. You know, I mean,
being 20 in the 30s, still being alive right now.
Yeah. It's not
going to
be
crazy, man.
It's not going to be that far out that we're going to be saying goodbye to the last person born in the 1800s.
Oh,
like that's going to be a news story, you know? Like last
you don't think they're
documented
already gone?
Living person.
Do you think there's a 113-year-old right now?
I think so.
Okay. Somewhere, yeah. Asia.
But it's pretty close. That's
probably
right
in
around
Asia.
The time. You know, people, when the oldest person drops off, it's like, then the next person in line is the oldest person for like 3 or 4 months.
In Asia,
always.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, it'll go for like 8 years. They'll like live really long.
Yeah.
But the one lady, that I read about, she lived to 122 or something. She quit smoking at 115.
That's stupid.
It's like,
oh, it increased her
life. She tacked seven more years on her life.
Well, it says, you know.
She didn't know. It's like she probably would have lived 20 if she would have kept smoking. Instead, she only lived 7.
Just think if she would have died like the next day.
You can't take that much change at that age.
I know. I just quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
No GPC gum or nothing. So there's been a lot of talk about this album, and I kind of liked a couple songs, but what do you guys think about the Velvet Underground, Lou Reed?
I'm not that familiar with the Banana album.
I know that it had a sticker that peeled off, and then it had a banana with no peel on it underneath it.
Right.
Which was kind of a thing.
And that was also Andy Warhol recorded that album.
Yep.
And it's not very well recorded.
No, it's not.
It sounds pretty bad.
I don't know if I've ever listened to it. I might have heard a song here or two.
I bet
you've
heard the song that's on the Doors movie soundtrack, Heroin. Heroin.
Maybe.
And I guess that I just don't know.
It's
a good one.
It's about drug abuse. And that's probably my favorite song off that album. Mm-hmm. And that Nico chick, she sings pretty nice and stuff. But it wasn't, when my parents listened to that as a kid, it didn't reach out and grab me.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it was on the list as like one of the top 10 or top 20.
Oh, it's always
classics.
Marked in there.
Yeah, for sure. And what about the Birds? You guys like the Birds?
I like the Birds.
They had an album that year.
Was it Winds of Change that came out that year?
It was. I think it was younger than yesterday. What's so funny?
I don't know. I went
you think
Scorpions? To the
Scorpions. I know. That's Wind of Change. Don't be confused.
I'm not going to be.
I think it was younger than yesterday. Or do you have different information on your...
Yeah, right here on the page I printed from Wikipedia, it says Winds of Change.
Yeah, I wonder who had an album called Younger Than Yesterday.
I don't know the titles of their records because I only like four of their songs.
Yeah. It had like
Younger
that Dylan song.
That was the Birds.
Isn't that what I said?
67?
Oh, you just asked
who
comes out with
I know, but he said it. We have conflicting information.
Oh.
Maybe they had two albums that year.
Well, this is October, so there's a lot of year before that.
Oh, okay.
And it seems to me like all the heavy hitters on this list released two records that year.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
Oh, but doesn't that say Eric Burdon and the Animals?
Oh, yeah, it does. What band were you talking about?
The Birds.
Oh.
They're an animal.
Oh, yeah.
Bird, I said the animal. Birds. You're like, I like the Birds.
I like the Birds.
Winds of Change.
What about Moby Grape? Were you guys big Moby Grape fans in 67?
Huh? Who?
Moby Grape.
I know the name, but I couldn't name any of their songs.
I remember Grape Ape.
And Moby Dick.
805.
Do you guys remember Grape Changes? Dick? Grape
hey,
Dick.
Hey,
Grape
Grandma. Dick.
It's a mix between Moby Grape and Moby Dick. Hmm. Grape Dick. It's like Green Peter.
Sounds like a British dish.
What yeah. about...
Stopping for a bit of Grape Dick.
What about Faces? Small Faces?
You know what? That was pre... I looked into that.
Small Faces.
It was pre-Rod Stewart. Wasn't he in the Faces?
Oh.
When they went to the Faces.
And Ron Wood?
Ron Wood and Steve uh-huh. Marriott. But I didn't recognize any of those songs. So
no picture tells a story, don't it?
No, that was Rod Stewart's solo stuff. But
oh.
What about, now here's a band that I didn't really like that much, but it's considered highly influential, and this album came out, Surrealistic Pillow by the Jefferson Airplane Starship. It was way before the Starship days, but I think it had White Rabbit on it,
yeah,
which is like yep. the most acid trip associated song.
Grace Slick was... unimaginably hot.
She was, man, then. And she had a great, great voice.
Yeah.
I mean, she probably still does, but
mm-hmm.
I like that album, and I don't really like where they went right kind of after that. Like, I don't know, something.
Well, how long before they became?
It was like 6 or 7 years.
And then they became
like,
Starship.
They became,
or
they
Jefferson,
became Jefferson Starship.
And then
they built that city.
They didn't build that goddamn city.
They didn't?
No.
On rock and roll. So
what city were they talking about?
San Francisco.
Oh.
Now, rumor had it, and it was, I think, proved wrong that it was about Cleveland, where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. But I don't believe that.
I heard Cleveland,
true.
Right?
I always thought it was about the Bay Area or San Francisco
yeah.
because of their origins.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I also thought that that is an extremely narcissistic song.
Yeah.
To just proclaim.
We're the gods of rock.
Yeah. We, Jefferson Starship.
Yeah.
Built this
when
city.
We were an airplane.
Is that more or less offensive, though, than someone telling you that God gave rock and roll to you?
What?
Well, he did.
God gave to me personally?
Yep.
That's what.
To you and me and to everyone.
Can I get that in writing?
To you, me, and everyone.
Yeah, I got it. Well, I don't have the album, but I could pull out a Kiss worksheet.
Well, actually, Kiss didn't write that, though. That's a cover.
What?
Yep. Oh. Written by...
Somebody in 1967.
And I don't know if these guys have anything to do with each other, but their names come up in my stupid, scrambled, fogged-up brain. David Essex or...
Oh, okay.
Russ Ballard?
That kind of...
Those guys have nothing to do with each other. But anyway... what else did we talk about before we went on? Cream had an awesome album, Disraeli Gears, which, and I'm going to, you know.
What's Disraeli mean? Is that an Israeli reference? Like I'm going to diss
It's
Israeli?
Anti-Israeli. No, I don't know what that is. I think it's based on a
Disraeli.
Book or something.
It's
like
a, well, I think it's a, is it a philosopher?
I have no idea.
That's what I'm going to say.
I thought it was based on a book, but I do not know. But, you know, now it's got Sunshine of Your Love on it, which is kind of overplayed on the radio, I think. And it's not that great of a song to me anymore.
And at bars.
And at bars by cover bands. But you know what? One great song that's on there? S-W-A-L-B-R. Can you pronounce that?
What is it?
S-W-A-L-B-R.
This is a swerble.
It's actually an acronym.
Mm-hmm.
And it stands for She... Looks, wait, SW.
She wore.
She was like a bearded rainbow.
Oh, yeah, I love that song.
But the rainbow had a beard. Yeah, that's an awesome
is
song.
It, the, is it,
it goes,
does that have anyone?
She's coming to me in the morning. Yeah, I think Foo Fighters did a weird version of that song.
Is that the one with Anyone for Tennis?
I don't think, but that song needs to go.
Anyone for Tennis?
Do you know that song?
No.
Dude, you got to hear that. After we get done, I'm going to play it for you. It's all...
That song is awesome.
Anyone for Tennis? Wouldn't that be nice? It's got a flute going in the background.
Is it on Disraeli Gears?
I don't believe so.
No,
I think it's on Fresh Cream.
I've got Fresh Cream.
So it's not on that.
I think it's on their big one, right?
The big one.
Well, what was the other one? Not Disraeli Gears, but they had a big album.
Goodbye Cream? No, that was their last album. Really.
I don't know. Maybe wasn't there one Wheels of Fire?
Dude, anyone for tennis is fucking so awesome.
What about Tale of Brave Ulysses?
Oh, I like that one. That was dark. And a band called Trouble covered that in the 80s.
Dude, you got to bust out some of that Anyone for Tennis.
Wouldn't that be nice? It's all like doo-dee-doo, doo-dee-doo.
If it's on Fresh Cream, I'm stoked because I can go home and check it out, too.
Did you get that record recently in that box of records that you got?
I got it from a friend bought it at a garage sale over in Bend for me.
Yeah, I have that actual vinyl, too, and it's in great condition. I don't remember where I got it, but I was kind of surprised. But yeah, I don't know. I was trying to find out what this Disraeli Gears, what Disraeli
is.
He's a
British Prime Minister.
Oh, okay.
Benjamin Disraeli?
Yep.
Wow, you guys are so smart.
Well, that's all it took for me. I needed to hear what it meant, and then that name just came flying.
Yeah, I ended up on a movie with George Arliss. Man, that guy looks like a...
Arliss?
That guy looks
like... Hey, you got any gum? You ever see that show Arliss on HBO, Paul?
You're like...
Yeah. He's on the bus and he's like, hey, you got any gum? Paul Schaefer. Oh my God. I wish I could find what I was looking for, but now I feel like you two, both of you guys.
What were you looking for?
I was looking to see what record Anyone for Tennis was on.
Have you guys ever played tennis?
I played tennis.
I played tennis.
I was pretty good at it.
Really?
Yeah.
I never did seriously.
I've played, but man, it requires a delicate touch with that racket.
Yeah, it's a hell of a thing.
And you have to be nimble and light on your feet, which mm-hmm. I have a problem with.
Yeah.
I find myself tripping.
Ping pong.
Tripping hard.
I play a little ping pong.
Ping pong's better than for tennis.
I'm really good at it on the Wii.
I thought you were going to say on weed. I'm really good at it on weed. Yeah, I threw my shoulder out playing Wii tennis, but... Sometimes you just get a little bit freaked out. Also, we talked about their Satanic Majesty's Request by the Rolling Stones.
Now, not that familiar with that. Well, no? Give me some hits on there.
Give you some hits?
They didn't really have any hits on that, did they?
Could you edit this part out while we scramble for information? No, I'm not that familiar with it myself.
I'm not familiar with that record.
It's touted. I thought Between the Buttons came out around that time, too, but I guess it was released in 68 in the States, which was weird because I looked at the track listing and I didn't recognize any of the songs, and I've heard the album Between the Buttons being touted as a great Rolling Stones album.
But then they released it when I looked at Satanic Majesty's Request.
But then when they released it in the U.S., they added two songs, which were Let's Spend the Night Together and Ruby Tuesday, two of their biggest hits ever. Mm.
The singles from their Satanic Majesty's Request was In Another Land.
Nothing.
I just don't remember it. Yeah.
I got nothing.
She's a Rainbow.
I know She's a Rainbow. It was more psychedelic. Did it have 2,000 Man on it, didn't it?
2,000 Light Years from...
And 2,000 Man. No?
Oh, no. That was the backside of the single was 2,000 Light Years from Home.
Tell me 2,000 Man's on there, please.
Sing This All Together, Citadel... 2,000 Man.
Yes, thank you for telling me.
Together, okay. See What Happens.
I love that song.
The Lantern, Gomper, and On With the Show.
Because on the disco-laden Kiss album, Dynasty, Ace Frehley did 2,000 Man in a really rock version with no disco going on. And that made me revisit that song. Mm-hmm. And it's a cool song that was obviously released in 1967 that talks about a dude from the year 2000. From the year 2000.
On Conan? Yeah.
No, on Rolling Stones.
Yeah, I know. This is the song.
And he's talking about having an affair with a computer. And he's got these weird flowers growing in his windowsill, which means to me, like, marijuana's legal. I have internet porn. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards were prophets.
Here we go.
He was having an affair with a random computer. And did they have computers in 1967? They had one.
Big ones.
They had one.
They'd be like rooms.
Lived in a building.
Yeah, it was a room. Yeah, and it was like building, yeah. Bigger than this whole house.
When I bought a computer in 1994.
What?
It had the hard drive almost held the CD.
It held two pictures.
Ours had an orangish amber screen. It was IBM compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the floppy drive.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would hold one dick picture.
One dick picture.
Point. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
My mom held on to that thing for so long.
And it was like the height of terror. You were stoked to have that much memory on a computer.
Yeah, for sure.
You're like, I can write more than two documents.
Can't save them, but I can write them.
Play a lot of Oregon Trail on that thing. It was great.
What'd you guys think about shit? What do you guys think about shit?
I'm not a fan.
Did you know that Satanic's Majesty's Request like drew mixed reviews from critics and the band itself when it came out?
Oh my!
Whoa. The band had mixed reviews on their own album?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't really like it that well.
Well, that's a lot of bloody rubbish now, isn't it?
What do you guys think?
No,
I was going to say, before I asked you what you guys think about shit, I was going to say, what did you think about The Who and their selling out that year?
I like that that record. It was pretty good.
It's got all the jingles in between each song,
yeah,
and they're not listed, and I wonder, were those just written by Pete Townsend, too? Or Roger Daltrey?
Mm.
Or John Entwistle? John Entwistle sang on the Heinz Baked Bean song.
Yeah.
I love watching him play bass.
Dude, what was that that you were showing me? You got to tell if you haven't got
to. Oh, there's isolated bass.
It's like a video of a concert.
It's like him in concert. So he's like in the dark at first, and the camera's just on him. And you can hear,
a little bit
in the background.
Really.
But it's just not shaky even. It's just him standing there and just doing his...
It's like his bass
and
track
you hear,
only.
Yeah, you hear his bass track. They
and
got
if you don't know what
tracks.
Song he's playing, you... It's like he's fucking being Cliff Burton, basically.
Really?
He's just going
he's
off.
Like,
and then I was like, oh, he's playing Won't Get Fooled Again? It's like I couldn't even hear the chord progression because he's just like... Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And it's so clear the way they extracted it from the mix. I don't know how they did
well,
that.
Well, I think it's a special videos that they put on some sort of DVD release.
Well, they could have, if they're just running, like, taking his, mic his bass cab and they're singling it out on the board.
Yeah, I think it was an official, DVD extra release. Because there was, three or four songs and it was all from the same show. You know, it wasn't like a crowd camera. You know, it was fixed on him.
Just him, yeah.
You know, and really, I don't know. I still
impressive.
Say Pete Townsend probably
ruined that band.
Well, he's at least number three, maybe even number four on talent in that band.
Oh yeah, I thought you were gonna say.
But yeah, I mean, you got it. I mean, he did write a lot of the songs, so it's. I mean, I don't know. Would they have been the same?
He wrote that piece of shit too.
And would they
do your heart?
And you know, I mean,
rough boys out on the street. Sorry.
Would they? Would the drums and the bass be as great if they would have had a busier guitarist that was always
Are you saying? Here's the question I think you're trying to pose: would The Who have been a better band if they had a decent guitar player? Zinger!
Well,
I just put it out there.
Maybe. Maybe it wouldn't have highlighted the other.
I just don't think that he was that good.
I think he was.
He was obviously a decent sound songwriter and a story writer. Mm-hmm.
And
as
he
far
was theatrical.
As,
he liked shoving things and getting the crowd worked up.
Yeah, but I don't know. He was the downside of the band to me when they gave him the mic, like. I like the songs, like the song Bargain. I love that song.
Oh, man, awesome. And My Wife.
But Pete Townsend.
Oh, wait, that's Bargain, right?
No, My Wife is My Wife.
Oh, okay.
That's John Entwistle singing that. Or no, I guess he wrote it, but
yeah.
Daltrey sings it. I just love Daltrey's voice.
Daltrey has an incredible voice.
Yep. And he's not a bad actor either.
I liked Tommy quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. My parents took me to see that at the theaters, not when it first came out, but they must have replayed it at the Pix, actually.
Yeah.
And I just remember I was probably, it must have been mid-70s. I might have been 7 or something
CD
like that.
CD Acid Queen's Jugs.
Oh, man. Like Anne Margaret just swimming in baked beans.
Yeah.
It's just like they're shooting out of the TV. And I was just like, whoa, it was weird. It was a surreal experience as a kid. And then to watch it now, and it just reminds me of that surreal experience. But, yeah, it was a great movie. Great a great mind to think of such a story of him, you know, being this kid that saw something tragic and lost his eyesight and his vision and his hearing and all of his senses, and then it was pinball that broke him out of it all.
A rock-opera. Do you call it a rock-opera or a rock opera?
I call it a rock opera, but you could call it a rock-opera. You can call you can call it whatever you'd like, son.
Can I go back and touch on a little bit of Satanic Majesties?
Sure, do it.
All right. It shot up to number 2 when it was released in the U.S. Easily going gold.
Wow.
And then almost immediately declined rapidly, soon viewed as a pretentious, poorly conceived attempt to outdo the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper's.
Wow.
And even though Lennon and McCartney did sing backing on a couple, there's harsh criticism from John Landau in the 5th issue of Rolling Stone, which, you know, that's early on. The magazine obviously came out after the Rolling Stones, and then to have them, like, crush on the Rolling Stones, that'd be pretty harsh, right?
Yeah, I think it'd be funny.
John Lennon once said, in 1970, he said that Satanic Majesty is Pepper. He said, "We love you, that song's all you need is love."
That's a great Lennon quote right there.
Yeah. All you need is love, mate.
It's inspiring. And I think that might be why it's so up there in the echelon when people talk about albums of the era, is because maybe it was so talked about and critically
acclaimed,
dissected.
Oh yeah,
you know, to where it, you know, there's obviously people. I don't know. It seems like a ripoff to me.
Yeah, it probably was.
I don't know, but that doesn't mean that, you know, the songs aren't good, even if they were like based upon songs of another. Like, say, if you took, you know, the idea of Sgt. Pepper's and you created your vision of what you would do in that kind of an album, would that be necessarily a bad thing?
There's a reggae version of Sgt. Pepper's out there. It's pretty good, by Easy All Stars.
Really? Yeah. See?
It's damn good. They also did Dub Side of the Moon.
Ah. Sweet. Oh, so it's straight versions of that, not like what's their take on what they would do in the theme and production of something similar.
Right.
That's cool.
And they also did a Radiohead album, OK Computer, called Radio Dread.
Weird.
It's pretty good.
Radio
good stuff.
Dread. That's nice.
If you like the reggae.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to like the reggae.
Yeah.
I can handle it in doses.
Yeah. Doses, dude. You said doses. So what do you guys, I'm not a big fan, but they did have an album this year. What do you think about the Grateful Dead?
Oh, the Grateful Dead had The Grateful Dead in 67, didn't
they? Yeah. Yeah, that was their album. But I was just wondering, overall, I mean...
Overall?
Were you a fan? Were you a
Dead? I am a fan, actually.
You still are?
I still listen to some Dead.
Right on. Yeah. I have a couple CDs, like Greatest Hits, but I don't throw them in that often.
I have quite a bit of vinyl.
Right on.
Yeah.
And so let me see here what kind of songs we had that I might recognize on this. God, there's a lot of songs on there.
Skeletons in the Closet.
But I don't really Walk Me Out in the Morning Dew.
Walk Me Out in the Morning Dew is a good one. It's an adaptation of someone else's song about nuclear war, mm-hmm. about the bomb going off. And
Good Morning,
and
Little Schoolgirl.
That also has a very deep meaning. I believe it's about pedophilia.
Yeah, I think it was an old cover by Sonny Boy Williamson.
Right.
Yeah, and Sitting on Top of the World, I think, was a hit off that, if I'm not incorrect. But I'm just going by what they're telling me here on the internet. But, yeah, I kind of listened to the Dead a lot. I remember almost getting to see him at the country fair when I was, like, 6 or something, but there were too many people. So the person that took me said, pfft. Actually, we're just going to the country fair. And for some reason, an adult that lives in this area didn't know that the Grateful Dead was playing at the country fair that year.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, "Oh, we're going to go to the country fair." It's like, "Oh, cool. What's that?" "Oh, it's this thing." Okay, so we go. There's massive, massive amounts of people. And she's like, "Man, there's so many people here. It's never this crowded." And then she pulls up. "Why is there so many people?" "Oh, the Grateful Dead's playing." She's like, "Oh, well, we better go because that costs too much and there's too many people."
Aww.
She didn't tell me that you'll probably be frying on the acid by the time we leave. So we better just take you back home to your parents. Bob Dylan had a greatest hits album this year.
Barbara Streisand had a Christmas album.
You know what I think's funny? That a lot of people had albums like Johnny Mathis Sings.
Huh?
And James
what else would he do?
That's his album. And then here's an album by James Brown called James Brown Sings Raw Soul.
Cold Sweat. James Brown's Cold Sweat came out that year also.
Cold Sweat.
And then there were some other releases. I can't find them right now, but it was like, this dude sings this dude.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was like in today's day and age. I don't know. It'd be like, or in those days, like Dean Martin sings Elvis Presley. Or
yeah.
Just some stuff.
Buddy Rich had a live album, Big Swing Face.
I liked a few songs off the Buffalo Springfield album that came out in 1967.
I think Country Joe McDonald and the Fish had something that came out that year, too.
They did. I think they might have had two releases that year.
What about Bill Cosby came out with Revenge?
What did he need revenge for? Revenge. Revenge.
Well, that was a comedy album, right?
Use the film, eat the pudding.
With the jello pudding pop in your mouth. My wife, Camille, is in charge of the ticket money. Traffic was pretty cool, but that's only like I don't know. Steve Winwood, he ruined himself for me in the 80s with his Valerie and all that shit that he was doing. I don't know. But I like Dear Mr. Fantasy. I like that song still to this day.
From who?
Traffic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like driving in traffic, but I do like that song. Oh, it looks like Bob Dylan also released a non-greatest hits album this year. Well, not this year, but in 1967, called John Wesley Harding. You guys, either of you big Dylan fans, or was he like...
No.
I've listened to some.
Overrated, because he wrote lots of poems and blew on a harmonica once in a while. That's kind of what I thought of him. But this album had classic All Along the Watchtower, which was done awesomely by, of course, Jimi Hendrix. Way better, I think, than Dylan ever did it. But yeah, lots of good albums, 1967. I don't know what else we got. What else do we got? You guys?
Well, the Beach Boys had a best of. It was actually their best of volume 2, I think.
And that was their best.
That came out in 1967.
What was it?
Which is interesting. The Beach Boys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Here's a funny band that I kept seeing come up. I've never heard of them, but I just like to say their name. They're called Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
You heard of those guys?
Uh-uh. Nope.
They're so good. Alice's Restaurant came out in 1967.
Wow.
Now that was that was a long song. That's about all I can say about that.
It was one of the longer songs of the day.
Of the day? Of that day? And one of your favorite bands ever and performers, Van Morrison, came out with an album. And it was probably doing exactly what it's called, blowing your mind.
he blew my mind a long time ago. You know, Bill Cosby, who won a Grammy Award for that 1967 album, won Grammys for his albums in 1965, 1966, 1967, 1968, and 1969, and 1970.
Jesus.
So I hate the Grammys even more now.
Yeah, because they're being like, come on, spread it out a little bit. Why do you got to be so one-sided? Jesus Christ.
The the first Grammy Award for comedy was given to Ross Bagdasarian Sr. for the Chipmunks song, which was the Chipmunks.
Huh.
That was the first Grammy, and then it went to
Homer
and Jethro for the Battle of Cucamonga.
Wow.
Interesting.
Hey, you know what other powerhouse vocalist made her debut in 1967 on a vinyl release?
Was it Etta?
No.
Aretha?
Well, I don't think that was her debut, but Janis Joplin.
Oh, yeah, with Big Brother and the Holding Company.
And she wasn't even listed as it wasn't Janis Joplin and Big Brother yet. It was just Big Brother.
Funny how that works, huh?
Yeah, and they're like, whoa, she's the best. We better put her name on top.
Yeah.
But it spawned the hit Down on Me, which is an awesome Janis song. Bye Bye Baby was on that album as well. I love Janis Joplin. My mom was a big Janis Joplin fan when I was growing up, and she kind of liked to live like Janis lived, too. That's why my mom's not with us anymore. Because she liked to drink a lot of wine and do a lot of heroin. Elvis Presley had like four albums. Tom Jones had an album. The Mamas and the Papas, with a provocatively titled album, The Mamas and the Papas Deliver.
Deliver.
Which is like having kids or whatever. That's gross. Mellow Yellow came out by Donovan.
Oh, that's nice.
Which had...
Mellow Yellow.
which I hate, but it did have Paul McCartney whispering in the background.
You got a little, you got a little saffron.
He's like,
you got?
Quite right. Slick.
Saffron's expensive.
I'm just mad about that. You guys remember the Electric Prunes? I had too much to dream last night. I love that song. And the Turtles came out with Happy Together, which was a number one hit on the charts with a bullet.
Yeah.
According to Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, mm-hmm. who later took Flo and Eddie from there.
Now, Chuck Berry released his Live at the Fillmore also in 1967.
I wonder if he was filming people going to the bathroom at that point.
Chuck Berry?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I know he was playing with his ding-a-ling quite religiously.
Yeah. He even wrote a song about it. I think he was a pioneer in the filming of urination, defecation. David Bowie had his debut release in 1967.
Was he dressed up?
No, he looked pretty normal. He looked different and young, but I mean, check him out. Is it that funny?
Oh,
Jesus
my.
Christ.
Did you say normal?
Yeah, well,
I guess for the time.
Yeah, he's got the Beatles
wig. I think he posted his high school senior picture.
Look at that turtleneck sweater. It's like
pretty impressive.
Wow, I want to see that next to Ziggy Stardust.
You should see it bigger. Look at him now. He's a looker.
My goodness.
And he's got this weird brooch. Oh, no, that's like a jacket all buttoned up.
A brooch?
It is a very androgynous, though, isn't it?
No. You mean he's could
got
be a
little,
a girl?
There's a little taste of Mary Tyler Moore going on with the hair there.
Exactly. There's like that little helmet head thing going on. Miles Davis came out with Miles Smiles.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the one I was talking about. It's a release from Roy Orbison called Roy Orbison Sings Don Gibson.
I'd like to hear Don Knott sing songs of Don Gibson.
Don Knott sing Roy Orbison. Now that's a record.
And it's like, you know, people could have self-titled albums and stuff, but these people like Dolly Parton, she had an album called Hello, I'm Dolly. Johnny Cash and June Carter had an album called, like, Chillin' with John and Judy, or John, not chillin'.
They didn't
say that bad. Just some dudes chillin'. No, when I say it, you'll know why I said that. Where did it go? God damn it. But the album is by June Carter Cash.
That's a rare one. It's hard to find on Amazon. Yeah. Don't even bother looking it up.
Yeah, 1967. It was Carrying On. Carrying On with Johnny Cash and June Carter.
I've got it on vinyl, but you can't get it. Yeah, so don't even bother looking for it.
It was the European release called Chillin' with Johnny Cash and June Carter. It's a soundtrack to the 50 most chillingest movies you've ever seen in your life.
Right. Hey, I've got a movie and a record for that.
Hey, that's weird. Dusty Springfield and Buffalo Springfield released albums within 3 days of each other.
Huh? Here's some of the, if you went and spent $20 to buy the top 100 songs from 1967, here's some of the artists you would get. Neil Diamond, Thank the Lord for the Nighttime.
Not his best era.
I don't like Neil.
Well, you'd get I'm a Believer by the Monkees.
Yeah.
That was written by
Happy Together by the Turtles.
That's weird. Neil Diamond wrote all those, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he wrote Happy Together, did he?
Oh, no, that was Flo and Eddie, wasn't it?
Yeah. Can't Take My Eyes Off of You by Frankie Valli.
Ooh. Here's another good one. I'm going to complete a whole list of just albums like this. Sammy Davis Jr. sings The Complete Dr. Dolittle.
Nice.
I'm going to release an album that's called Terry Giles Sings Songs. Hey, the Amboy Dukes featuring Ted Nugent made their debut in 1967.
Oh, yeah?
And it was before the Journey to the Center of the Mind.
Wow.
But they did do Baby, Please Don't Go.
Engelbert Humperdinck was in action.
He did have an album, and Hans has that album, I think.
Humperdinck.
You know, that's not even his real name.
Changed it to Humperdinck.
He took that name. His name's like Ralph Clark or something.
He stole it from some, like, 4th century.
It's a literary reference or something, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to choose a totally new name, why is it going to be Engelbert Humperdinck?
It's pretty interesting.
That's a bad name.
You're obviously having a hard time not saying it.
I love saying it. Humperdinck.
if you were close friends with Engelbert, what would you call him? Would you call him like Humperdinck?
Oh, yeah. Boy, how would you nickname
Humperdinck.
That?
Well, if he was my good friend, I'd probably know him by his real name.
Dink?
I'd probably call him Humper.
Leslie.
Dick. I'd be like, what's up, Humperdink? You could just call him his real name, and it's like a derogatory term.
The Dink.
Yeah, I know.
I call him Humperdick.
The Dinkster. Yeah. The Dinkmeister.
What about Peaches and Herb were around?
No, they weren't. Herb Albert.
Close your eyes.
Peaches and Herb?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, Herb. Who's this Herb guy that you keep talking about?
Isn't that him?
No, I thought Peaches and Herb were 70s. Are you sure you're not thinking about...
This is the top 100 songs from Billboard Top 100.
Herb Albert.
So the Monterey Pop Festival was held in 1967.
Oh, yeah. And that was a big boost for all those bands.
It was the first deal of its kind or whatever.
And wasn't that where The Who was pissed because Jimi Hendrix burnt his guitar and they didn't play or they had to play last?
Yep.
And so they broke all their shit. It wasn't as cool. I think all those bands got a huge boost after that Monterey Pop Festival as far as album sales and popularity, including Janis Joplin and The Who and Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah. The whole explosion, right?
Yeah. The Bee Gees had an album in 1967.
Hmm. Peter, Paul, and Mary were digging on rock and roll music.
Yeah.
And the Electric Prunes.
Yeah, I had too much to drink dream last night. Yeah. I talked about that one.
Yeah.
Dionne Warwick, before she was a psychic.
Wow.
Putting out an album called The Windows of the World. Maybe she was already seeing into the future.
Were you a big fan of Petula Clark?
No, I hated that bitch. She broke my heart. How about Vanilla Fudge?
Huh?
Tasty stuff. I liked their cover that was their only really big popular hit, which was, I can't even remember because it wasn't that popular, but I think it was by Martha and the Vandellas.
The Doors were banned from the Ed Sullivan Show that year.
Yeah, for saying higher.
Yeah. For going ahead and playing their song and Jim singing it as it was written.
Was that on NBC?
I'm not sure what network
because,
it was on.
Yeah, because they still, you can't Letterman say that because even on The Apprentice, he says you're fired. He doesn't say you're hired.
Girl, you can't get much fired. What about the Trogs? Are you familiar with the Trogs?
I'm familiar with Troglodynamite.
That's a good album that came out that year. What was the hit off that one?
I have no idea.
That was a wild thing.
Trogged if you do, trogged if you don't.
What would you name your second album after you went that route?
Troglodynamite? It'd be like Troglific. Troglomatic. I don't think they had
it. Troglorious.
The Glorious Trogloriums. Yeah, I don't recognize any songs on this album by the Trogs. But aren't they the ones that did Wild Thing? Come on, help me out, you guys.
I don't know.
Wild Thing! Jesus Christ, dude.
What? Isn't that the riff?
No, I don't know. You freaked me out there for
it's
a second.
Just a
1967.
Yep, that was quite a year. That was the year that I was conceived.
9 years later, I was born.
Yep. How you were like 8 years, 9 years? You're 76, baby.
Yeah,
January 76. That's pretty early.
Yeah, so that means you were conceived in 75. Boy, we're learning math and how to count years here.
Yeah, Wild Thing with a Girl Like You and Love Is All Around.
Those are their big hits.
Yeah,
but they weren't on the Troglodynamite album. Troglodynamite.
Each of those sold over 1 million copies.
Nice. Well,
fucking good for them.
Yeah.
Why don't they give me some of their money? Well, I think that's about enough of the 67. Before we get out of here, I would like to ask Jim about his last show up there in Seattle. I heard you guys played up there recently. How did that go?
That was fun.
Awesome.
The Highline Bar
on
Broadway is an awesome club.
And I'm trying to recall the whole lineup, but it's not coming to me who the bands that you played with.
Was band called Grenades.
Okay, yeah.
A band called Great Falls, Sammoth Race.
Oh, that's the one that I was most familiar with.
Whom I had never seen but heard.
Yeah.
So seeing them
What'd
was
you
great.
Think? It was awesome. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, cool. They're a pretty great band.
And I heard another little kind of I don't know what you call it, but it's kind of cool when you see this happen. A friend of mine went to the Red Fang show recently at the Wonder Ballroom about a week ago, and the drummer was wearing a Norska shirt.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are friends with those guys or whatever, but...
Yeah, well, we record... Adam Pike records us, and he does sound for their live stuff.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we, the guys bump into them, and it just seems like we wind up at a lot of the same shows.
Right on.
When they're in town, because they're not, they're on tour all the time.
Right. Yeah, that's why I was kind of, it was weird that they did that hometown show, just like a one-off thing, I guess. I can't remember who opened for them, because I have a bad memory sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I would have liked to have seen that show, but I did not get the chance to go check it out.
In fact, our Seattle show, when it was being booked, was originally booked for that Saturday, but Red Fang was playing that Saturday.
Ah.
So they switched the date to Friday, because there was only a couple other shows.
That's nice.
Yeah, that was nice. We had some people there.
Are All Over Prince coming back, or is that just something I just made up?
All Over Prince?
Yeah.
Or Oliver Prince?
No, All Over.
All
like,
Over.
You know, the
Prince.
Shirt that's just like...
Printed all over?
Printed all over the back, underneath the arms.
There's a guy, I have this math class, and there's a guy that sits in front of me in this math class, and he's got to be a 30-something like myself, kind of heavy set, not like myself. And he wears, he's just a real plain, normal-looking guy. Uh-huh. He wears this Cash Money All Over print jacket, and it's a white jacket. It's okay. I'll try to get a picture of it.
Is this all bills?
It's a white jacket. Well, it's dingy white jacket. It's really dirty, but you know, I can imagine it bright white, and it's $100 bills kind of tessellating on each other,
right?
Like a brickwork pattern in gold that's been printed on the jacket. So you got this dude in work boots and jeans, and he's bald and. Just an older, middle-aged gentleman in this math
and
class.
And he's just enjoying his...
puts on his Cash Money. It's like a hip-hop.
Do you think people are fooled to think that that guy's, like, rich when he wears that around?
No, I don't think so. I don't necessarily think so, because it's really dirty. That's the thing that puts it over
like
the top.
It's like brown money?
If I had something like... If I was into that sort of thing and I had a jacket like that, I imagine I would keep it white. And like, I wouldn't wear it day in and day out. Out to the smoke shack, you know, leaning up against the post at the bus stop, all that stuff. I wouldn't wear it for day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, that's too funny. Yeah, we got to get a picture of that for sure. Well, I'm glad that Dustin handed me this note before I took us out of the episode, because our devout listener Hans would be mad if we forgot to do this.
Did I?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I fucked it up.
I was going to say, did I hear last episode on Monday that you guys, Hans was listening to Torch?
Yes.
Harmonicraft?
Yeah.
It's an excellent record.
Harmonicraft, that's how you say it. I had trouble pronouncing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the artist that did the artwork for that record, Santos, killer artist.
Right on. See?
But nothing like the Flaming Lips.
No, I would not say they're anything like the Flaming Lips.
All right. Yeah.
So but now, both bands are hot.
Yeah. Wow. Their name implies hotness.
All right. Yeah.
But yeah, Hans, aren't you glad we got someone in the studio that knows a little bit what's going on now? So let's get to this.
CD player. Find out now and we'll find out later. What's in Hans's CD player? It's always something cool because you know he's a player.
Did you know that Hans was a player?
I just found out.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had a little rappy thing that sounded like a rap song about Hans, a CD player, and he was getting tired of that, so we pulled out a Sabbath reference for Hans. And until we find something new, that's what we're going to go with. Today, let's see what Hans has got. He's listening to – whoa. We're just talking about the Amboy Dukes. He's listening to Ted Nugent, the ultimate Ted Nugent, which must be a greatest hits package.
Ooh, I'd hate to see that.
Now,
are you sure it's not spoken word?
Nearly every day.
I have a hard time. Yeah. I was going to say, awesome. I have a hard time putting up with the regular Ted Nugent. The ultimate Ted Nugent is it's a little intimidating.
He's freaking out talking to Sarah Palin. He's looking, we're going to do this fucking ride. And if you come on my property, I'll shoot you. I'll eat you, too.
I'll throw some antlers on
everything
you.
I shoot, I eat, because I just kill what I eat. But, no, every time we have practice at Griefhammer practice, Hans always busts out Stranglehold.
Oh, man. Is Flames ever there?
No. But I am, and I play the drums, then we start jamming it, and I always talk him into trying to do a slowed down, doomy version of Stranglehold. But
oh wow, that'd be like 30 minutes, 40 minutes,
and you just hear Lance growling like a bear. Here I come again, now baby, like a dog in heat. You can tell it's me by the flavor now, baby. It's something that rhymes with heat.
Probably meat, right?
And then it's going to burn your house down or something. It's a really tough guy. Lyrics. The lyrics are like, I'm going to choke you out, bitch.
And Paul McCartney doesn't whisper in the background of that one.
Quite right.
I think it's a couple zebras and a wildebeest in the background.
Dying from fucking arrows. Yeah. I'm just mad about Ted Nugent.
A punctured lung sound.
Oh, Lordy. Well, shit. We better.
What about your,
Oh, I skipped last time because I don't, I can't speak correctly. What have I been listening to? I don't know. My stereo is all shitty in my car, so I've been listening to podcasts in the car.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
I listened to the Big and Loud podcast, so I guess that was in my CD player. Okay. And I laughed my ass off at those guys. They're funny fellows. Big Jim and Loud Don.
I don't know.
A couple of comedians from Portland. Actually, Jim used to be on KUFO, when they were still on FM station.
Was he Luce Lockwood?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, that was a DJ.
Is that a sociological term? Or
no, it was a DJ. I don't know. It might have been for him.
Oh, okay, I got you.
I don't know if like, was he a
Luce Lockwell, like a latchkey kid? Yeah. If it was
like a Luce Cannon or something?
Like if he was really good at picking locks?
I don't even know.
Luce Lockwood?
Yeah, I don't even know how he spelled that Luce.
Lock Luce, Lucewood?
Like L-U-C-E?
Maybe.
All right. Well, we forgot to tell you guys. Get out there.
What's on your turntable, Jim?
What's on my turntable?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I just picked up a really nice, nice copy of the Beatles' White Album, the White Vinyl.
Ooh,
they had it over at Happy Trails, and thanks to technology, I was doing homework. Then I go from doing the homework to the computer, you know, to see what's going on, and I go to Facebook, and then it just pops up right then and there. Happy Trails. Hey, we just got a bunch of Beatles stuff in, and there's a really rare White Album on white vinyl with all the inserts and everything still in it. $30, come get it. So I called him up and said, I'll be there in like 10 minutes. And he's like, well, there's a couple dudes looking at it right now, talking about it.
Take it out of their hands.
So I went down there anyway, just hoping. He said, if they leave, if they put it down and they leave, I'll grab it for you and put it behind the counter. And I got there and I looked behind the counter. Sure enough, there it is. I was like,
I didn't even know they released that on white vinyl.
It is a beauty.
Was it
beauty.
On Apple? On the regular? Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Mm.
And $30 was a total steal because it's in killer condition.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to put that on a jacket and wear that and get it all dirty?
Cash money.
No. But I'm a little too protective when it comes to records at the house.
Well, I got
like,
a sealer.
I got the air duster right there, and I'm every time. I'm
I got a sealer. You can seal it up.
Yeah, he's a laminating fool.
Oh yeah.
I'll laminate it and seal it.
Well, he's not a fool, but
Amber asked at the event last weekend. She was like, "Who's got the sealer?" She was totally jealous, and I think when I stopped by your house, it was like I saw it. And I was like, "Ooh, Amber would be so jealous of that."
Yeah,
and that was the first thing she mentioned
fun.
When she. We
it was
got
actually
there.
Pretty economical. It was.
He laminated a piece of pepperoni.
I laminated a piece of pepperoni.
A
I
crayon.
Had to stop and get it out because it was too thick for my laminator, and it was just gonna come through. And I was like, "Eh."
Speaking of that, we gotta get out of here and go get some pizza now.
Pizza!
Yeah. So hey, you guys, we forgot to tell you, go get out there and do some humping because it's Wednesday.
Yeah,
it's Hump Day. And thanks for listening. Thanks to Jim for being here with us talking about 67.
Thanks for having me.
Albums and shit.
Yep. Yeah,
man,
forgot
awesome.
You got anything coming up with Norse Guy? Forgot to ask.
Now we're playing Stump Fest in April 19th and 20th at Mississippi Studios.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing night two of that with Floor, who is Steve, the singer guitar player from Torch. Hans has listened to last week. Or last
I've heard
Monday.
A little bit of Floor. They were playing him at the Dixie one time because someone gave Dean one of the CDs. And they fucking sound awesome.
Yeah, they're incredible. So they're going to be coming through at that that festival. It's two nights, Mississippi Studios, 21 and over. Two different lineups both night. The 19th, Tweakbird is headlining, and the 20th, Floor is headlining. That's the night that Norse will be playing.
That's awesome because the place is going to burn down if you light the if you torch the floor.
Right.
It's
true.
Get there soon.
But we're doing that. And then again, that's April 19th and 20th. You can go to MississippiStudios.com. The venue's located in Portland. And get advanced tickets there if you'd like.
Right.
All right, I shouldn't ask you so late because now that the outro bed is done. But thanks for listening, you guys, and we'll see you on...
The TagCast podcast can be heard on iTunes,
Stitcher,
TuneIn Radio,
and our website,
TagCastPodcast.com.
You can also hear us rebroadcast on internet radio station Rock Out Radio on Friday evenings. Find us on Facebook and review us on iTunes.
Help support our show. Donate directly on our website.
Or click on our Amazon affiliate link before you shop there.
TechCastPodcast.com.
Pluggy plug 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 plug. Hey, all you Taggets. How you guys doing out there? Got your concerts coming up, comedy shows, music. You guys want to get out and do something fun? Of course you do. You don't want to sit at home like a stick in the mud. Wednesday, February 27th, it's the Oak Street Speakeasy Comedy Showcase. It's Andy Bradwin's going away show. He's moving to Boston. So I'm sure it will be most of the usual suspects of the Eugene comedy scene, including myself, Mac Chase, Carmichael, probably Jason Eifler, Dylan Flynn, and, of course, your host, Seth Milstein. That starts at 9 o'clock. It's a 21 and over show, $5 suggested donation. If you're broke, it could be free for you. Friday, March 1st at the City in Eugene, it's the prelims for Oregon's Last Comedian Standing, Survival of the Funniest, 2013. 2222 MLK Boulevard in Eugene. It's a free show. It's 21 and over, 8 o'clock. Saturday, March 2nd at the Dixie Creek Saloon. It's the benefit for Brooklyn put on by the Willamette Valley local music scene. Got a slew of acts, including Lyndon and Amber Wood, the Milestoners, Ed to Shred, Strange Dichotomy, Bikini, and the High Desert Hooligans. It all starts at like 5 o'clock for a couple hours of all-age action, if you come with your parents, and then after 7, it's 21 and over. It's a free show, a fundraiser for a great cause. Saturday, March 16th at the Wow Hall in Eugene, it's We Have Guns, Tall Boy, 30-Pound Test, and Audiophobia. Tickets are on sale at the Wow Hall and online. Check that out and go see that show. If you're not in the Eugene area and you're down or up here by Albany, go to Tangent at the Dixie Creek Saloon. We got Wicked Haven with Crimson Guardian and Bikini. It's a 9 p.m. show, 21 and over, also free. Saturday, March 23rd in Portland at the Hawthorne Theater, it's Nile with Ceremonial Castings and World of Lies. Featuring my buddy Tony Avila. You should hit him up on Facebook. He's on my friends list. He can get you a discount on some tickets for that one.
Sweet.
March 26th, it's Graves at Sea, Ash Borer, Aldebaran, and Ephraim, I can't even say that name, so forget it. It's at the Ash Street Saloon. I can say that, though. It's $8. That's up in Portland. It's a Tuesday night for some doom. Wednesday, March 27th at the Cosmic Pizza in Eugene on 8th. It's Pajama People featuring Ike Willis doing two sets of Frank Zappa's great music. I will be setting in for a few tunes on bass guitar. Thanks to Glenn and those guys for giving me the chance to jam with Ike. A legend, a living legend. Thursday, March 28th at the Granary, it's Comedy as Advertised with your host, Seth Milstein. I will be on that show as well, and we will have the lineup of comedians coming soon, as soon as the information becomes available. It's a 9 p.m. show, also free. March 29th, it's a Friday at the Crystal Ballroom, Anthrax, Exodus, Municipal Waste, Holy Grail, and High on Fire. That's up in Portland. I'm lucky enough to have a VIP pass with my name on it, thanks to Dave Forsythe, my buddy down in Reno, Death Metal Dave. So we're going to be talking maybe with the dudes from Anthrax and Exodus that night. It should be good. The next night, March 30th, it's a Saturday night at the Roseland Theater, Clutch and Orange Goblin. Don't have any information except that's an awesome show and you should check it out and go to it if you have the chance. Sunday, March 31st at the Actors Cabaret of Eugene, it's the 18th annual Laugh-Off. It seems expensive at $20 a head, but all proceeds go to the Green Hill Humane Society. This is like the 18th year in a row. They will name the funniest person in Eugene. I will be performing at that. It's 18 and over, 7 p.m.
What's the charity?
Green Hill Humane Society.
I'll get some cat hat, Santa hat parts.
I will bring them down there.
All right.
So, yeah, you guys get out and do something fun. There's so much to choose from. And then when you get home, you can listen to more of the TagCast podcast at TagCastPodcast.com. Hope you guys have a wonderful evening.